present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with an ad seen in the Sunday Supplement, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Superb quality men's crease-resist trousers. These generously cut trousers are beautifully tailored, with one button envelope back pocket, zip fly, belt loops, and parallel legs.
Thank you to Gene Allen of Western Supermare for sending us that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome, first on my right, Linda Smith and Clive Anderson. Facing them, Francis Ween and John O'Farrell. Linda, you get the easiest question of the night. What's got two legs, two arms, weighs 6 pounds, 12 ounces, and improves your electoral standing?
You need some help with this one.
Oh, so. I don't know. It's a tricky one. Yeah. I may need your razor-sharp legal brain on this one. Well, it's little baby Leo, isn't it? Born to the Blairs. And giving Tony Blair, apparently, a bit of a leg up in the polls before he was born. Blair was sort of a bit down in the popularity polls, and then as soon as Leo was born, popularity was soaring again. So I'm just hoping, my worry here is that William Hague, who looks like a giant old baby, isn't going to get any ideas about this and thinking he can cash in on this baby boom by walking around Parliament in a baby grow. And it's a scary thought, really, isn't it? So I suppose, really, probably Tony's thinking, well, you know, if Cherie has a few days' rest, maybe they could have another couple before the election, just to seal the old deal.
It's a nice touch. They've named him Leo after the Lion King, which I think is...
No, actually, Leo was the bookie's favourite name. It was 2-1 at Ladbrokes. The odds shortened dramatically after Tony Blair was seen coming out, having put 10 grand on it.
I had a tenner on Lionel.
Lionel Blair.
No sense of humour, those Blairs. Yeah.
Well, did you see that statement that Cherie put out immediately afterwards, saying she hadn't remembered what an ordeal Labour could be? Obviously, he hasn't spoken to Frank Dobson lately. Tomorrow. But he mustn't be cynical, because they were so sweet, the photographs. And you think all cynicism that Blair hates so much has melted away.
It has.
Lovely. I mean, he was so cuddly and cute, and baby looked all right. Yeah.
It's the first time Downing Street has been the home to the patter of tiny feet since Colin Moynihan was a minister. And with little Leo just a week old, he can look forward to David Blunkett popping round with the first exam paper. So 2 points to Linda. Clive, which lottery winner wasn't so much celebrating as ailing?
Well, if I admit I don't know the answer to this, if I brought a baby along, would I still get the points? No, I do know what this is. This, unfortunately, this is Bob Ayling. He's had a bad millennium so far, hasn't he? Because he was running, at the beginning of the year, he was happily running British Airways, though they've lost quite a lot of money recently, and he's been sacked from that. And for some reason, he's not being allowed to run the Dome either, or play his part in the Dome either. I think there's a job here. When Cherie Blair is back on her feet after the baby, I think she'll be able to bring a sort of action on behalf of Bob Ayling and the other woman who was sacked from running the Dome. Because in Prime Minister's Question Time this week, it was said it was a success, and yet they've sacked both the chief executive and the chairman and everybody else other than ministers.
So I think
Cherie Blair, who specialises in employment law, can... It's an unfair dismissal case here. It'd be brilliant.
They're using success in the sense of dismal failure. It's not a very often used sense of the word.
It was the most visited site in Britain, the Dome, after...
But everyone will look at a car crash. You can't stop ghoulish curiosity, can you?
Apparently, each visitor is subsidised to the tune of £90. If you add up the subsidy and divide up the number of visitors, it's £90 per visitor. So I haven't been, so I'm just sending in for 45 quid and I won't bother.
John, who thinks he's got a scheme to see New Labour pensioned off?
Yes, this is William Hague is offering a fortune to pensioners to vote for him. There's 11 million pensioners out there. And the two main parties have got into a sort of bidding war. Who can offer the most? Labour are saying, we'll give you £5. And Hague's going, well, we'll give you £10, plus more interesting videos at the post office. And Labour go, OK, £10, more interesting videos at the post office, and the right to wear overcoats all summer long. Less fiddly money. and high-speed stair lifts. And we can't afford it, and it's all going to end in tears. When it comes to polling day, they're both going to try and get their votes, and they say, oh, dear, I'm not going out. So they're not going to vote anyway.
But he can only afford to give them this rise in the pension because he's going to take away everything else. He's going to cancel their free television licence, their Christmas bonus. He's going to sell them into slavery, put them up the chimneys. And they're supposed to be grateful, which they are.
There is a slight difference in the two parties' approaches, because the Labour Party are adding a more gaming element to it, like you get the free TV licence, and there's more of a supermarket sweep effect. Yes. They win their weight in cat food, things like that. The Tories are just banking on people forgetting how vile the Tories always are to pensioners, where they think, well, they're getting on, they're getting no younger, they'll have forgotten.
William Hague claimed that New Labour regarded pensioners as uncool, whereas under the Tories, many of them were just freezing. Francis, listen to your piece of music. China in Your Hand by De Pauw. Francis, why has Bill Clinton got China in his hand?
Aha! Congress has just passed this bill giving China most favoured nation status, some permanent trade relations with America. And it's been a huge issue over there. People saying, oh, well, you know, if you do this, you have no leverage over China. They can go around massacring people and you have no sanctions you can apply against them. But nevertheless, it went through, not least because, as is well known, Chinese have pots of money with which they buy people up in Washington. And very successful it was too. And the idea, the sweet, charming idea, as put in a lot of the right-wing magazines in America, is that marketization, as they put it, and privatization, will bring with it democracy and stability and so forth, as they showed so triumphantly with the Soviet Union when it became Russia. That was their policy there. Worked perfectly well. And it will work with China.
No movement yet on Cuba, then, in America. The sanctions are kept up against them.
Well, they've got to have someone to kick around. Yeah. China's a bit too big for that sort of treatment, I think. Yeah, North Korea, on the other hand, very promising.
The Chinese are looking forward to the day when every home will have a computer, every town a McDonald's, and every school a crazed gunman. 2 points there. Clive, who believes the prophets of crime shouldn't be honoured in their own land?
Oh, this is one of many hundreds of different proposals that are coming out at the moment from both parties in a sort of grand bidding auction for who can be nastiest to criminals and crack down on them. This, for some reason, was announced by Mo Molum. I'm not quite sure why Jack Straw didn't get to do this one, or the Lord Chancellor or somebody, but they're going to seize the assets of criminals. And I think working on the assumption that all crime is done by a sort of Mr. Biggs, who've got millions of pounds, which they haven't taken the precaution of sending to the Cayman Islands first. We're going to get all this money and be able to run the entire country on a few bank heists. But the weakness in the whole system is that an awful lot of criminals do their crime because they're short of money, or they owe it to the bookie or something, or they nip straight around the pub and drink it, or they pay off their debts. So there aren't many assets to seize once you get to them.
Mo Molum has announced that the English courts will soon be empowered to seize all the profits of crime, a job which until now has been done by barristers. Dr. Molum said she saw no reason why millions of people should work hard for a living while a few live a life of luxury built upon the misery of others. Though it always worked for John Burt.
Oh, you're brave now, aren't you, now?
5 years.
We were brave with...
5 years of sucking up to the boss.
We were
as soon as he's out there.
We were brave
Greg,
all the time.
What about Greg Dyke then? What do you think about him? Greg Dyke, eh? Go on, say something about Greg Dyke. Go on. You're so big. And a shock announcement by the former chairman of the news quiz.
Dr. Molum also announced that the government... Wish you'd laugh at something broadcast. Dr. Molum is the government minister in charge of drugs policy, despite her admission that she once took cannabis. It's believed that Tony Blair assumed her confession she'd experimented with a little weed was a reference to Peter Mandelson. John, your piece of music.
You're no good, you're no good, you're no good, baby, you're no good. I'm gonna say it out loud, you're no good, you're no good, you're no good, baby.
You're No Good by the Swinging Blue Jeans. Swinging parallel trousers. John, apart from 50 million viewers, who else thinks ITV is no good?
Ah, yes, this is some TV regulatory body telling...
ITC.
ITC, thank you. The ITC have told ITV that their programmes are of very low quality, and this was then made into a programme called The TV Regulators from Hell. David Letterman was sort of hauled before the committee and said, you know, are your programmes a bit lowbrow? And he said, can I phone a friend? So it's basically ITV is not very good, is the answer.
Mm-hmm. So which programmes were they talking about on ITV?
Well, that Trevor MacDonald one, Tonight. You know, supposedly serious current affairs, and in fact it's Richard and Judy, but without the gravitas.
Well, without the Judy, anyway.
And the only thing that's holding it together is this, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Which is that, when I was in America last week, I saw, you know, that it's now a huge hit in America on ABC over there. And one night I saw it, and this chap used up all his lifelines just to get to $300.
I thought that fireman, who won the most money of all, I thought he was very charming and intelligent and handsome, if he's listening. But the questions in America are really easy, aren't they? It's for $500,000, what is your name?
Like that poor chap on Mastermind years ago, what's your name? Pass. Magnus Magnusson said, no, what's your name? Pass, George Pass. Never mind.
Well, it's good to hear that one again.
Yes.
Another chance to hear.
It was a golden age, wasn't it?
That was when John Burt was running it, though.
No, he's crap compared to the present director.
What's the editor of The Guardian like then, Simon? Because
tall with glasses.
Yeah. Good employer, is he? He's loyal to his staff.
Kind, wise, good, true.
Because you might be relying on him soon.
Balanced. The scores at the end of round two are everybody 8 points, and we. We start round three with the front page of a museum's public information leaflet.
Welcome to the Josephine and John Bowes Museum. Our toilets are on the first floor. Check information boards for the day's activities.
Thanks to Margaret Wicks and Bishop Auckland for that. Linda, which university seems to think our friends from the north should stay there?
Ah, yes, this is Magdalen College, Oxford, who have turned down in successive years two Geordie girls who did really, really well in their exams, and they were turned down for sort of quite vague reasons. But obviously, they weren't very good because they were both offered places by some deadbeat university called Harvard. And Oxford are saying, oh, no, it's not snobbery. They're saying they think it's because of the way they spoke that Oxford thought it was a bit down market for them. And I don't think a college that calls itself Magdalen, when it is in fact Magdalen, is in any position to criticise someone else's accent. The word is quite clearly Magdalen. When you have a few gins, you don't get Magdalen drunk, do you? It's not Reginald Magdalen.
I think you're missing the point here on this story. I think the spelling of the college is that important.
I actually think it is. I think it's the most important thing here.
Do they still have UCA forms? Is that what you do when you're filling in your...
UCAS.
UCAS, sorry.
That's pronounced Magdalen.
No, it's yes. It's pronounced UCA. So if you're really clever these days, you put Oxford and Harvard down on your form. You don't sort of run through the British universities. You just pick out the most famous five wrestlers, or not wrestlers, universities. Sorry.
What did you do at university,
Club? I ate out a lot.
Mind you, now, with the renaming of polytechnics, Harvard probably used to be Loughborough, didn't it? It's different now, isn't it? Leicester is the Sorbonne now. Magdalen.
Laura Spence from Tyneside is away to Harvard to study medicine after being rejected by Oxford University. Magdalen College denied rejecting her because she was from the north, adding some of their very best students have come from Watford. Clive, listen to this.
I'm looking through you. Where did you go? I thought I knew you. What did I know? You don't look dear.
and you have changed. I'm looking through you.
It's a bit modern for Clive, that.
Why might the latest development in medical technology prove a little hard to swallow?
Oh, yes. This is bizarre, isn't it? This has been developed at the Royal London Hospital. And if they need to give you an internal examination now, instead of having to swallow something nasty like a tube and lights shining down it, you can now just swallow a little pill with a tiny little camera inside it. And you swallow it down, and it just sort of films all your insides, all your guts and your stomach and your colon and your cecum and your all that stuff.
What?
But the only difficulty is, of course, you've got to...
Cecum?
Yes. Cecum, yeah.
Yes.
That's Cockney rhyming slang.
All that. It's all there in your alimentary canal. It's alimentary, my dear.
Along and with your Ventine.
Yes, and you swallow it. But
and your Milligan.
The difficult... that's a cecum.
What's a cecum?
The inevitably is you've also got to swallow the cameraman who operates it, which is...
Not for the first time, either.
And this is a marvellous development in medical science, and it's a great leap forward.
And it's going to make up most of the ITV schedules on Saturday evenings.
By a freak coincidence, the first person to swallow this is going to be Carol Vorderman, because there's not quite enough of her on the television yet. And I think you'll find all that's correct, even notwithstanding barracking from my home team captain.
Well, they will. They'll have through the keyhole surgery with Lloyd Grossman saying, whose bowels are these?
It's obviously someone who likes all bran.
Yes, I suppose it's as well to be the first person to use this, because you're on a waiting list at a hospital in 9 months' time. It'll have seen a bit of action, won't it?
You've drawn the short straw if you're the one that has to take them down to Boots for processing.
It arrives at your Boots for processing. I hope that's right. I haven't just made all that up in some bizarre dream.
No, large parts of it are almost correct. It's news that the Israeli scientist Gavriel Idan and doctors at the Royal London Hospital have co-developed a tiny capsule that can be swallowed like a pill to relay video images from inside the body. 2 points to Clive. John, who aggressively insisted that sitting down is no longer child's play?
There was a report by someone who said that musical chairs was a bad game for children to play because in nursery school, the one who pushed the other children out of the way always won, and so the nursery teachers were winning every time. Everyone's leapt on this and says, political correctness gone mad. They say, political correctness gone mad, and now everyone's up in arms about it. And
it's Labour Party policy, isn't it, John?
No, it's not Labour Party. Margaret Hodge disowned it very quickly, I think you'll find, even though she was there at the launch of this leaflet.
I thought she was speaking out in favour of it.
She was saying, this is a very good...
No more musical chairs, have musical sofas, and you'll add sofas.
Musical
so
futons.
More people can win.
I have to say, I think the whole way that News Quiz is organised is too competitive. I mean, why do we have to have a loser? And why does it have to be me and Frances?
It's all to do with non-competitiveness, and she wants to introduce some very complicated system of proportional representation and single transferable chairs. No one gets left out.
Frank Dobson would even get to win.
Educationalists were quick to defend musical chairs, saying the mad scramble for the few seats perfectly prepares children for the experience later in life of riding on privatised trains. Linda, who's been granted some serenity from the hurly-burly of Hollywood life.
I was just a little bit overcome with emotion there, thinking about this terrible thing that's happened. Apparently Liz Hurley, the well-known dress wearer, and Hugh Grant, the well-known man who stands next to woman in dress, splitting up, and it's heartbreak all round. Going to be a bit of a struggle over who gets custody of the talent,
but they're not splitting, they're just having a trial separation.
So. By living in the same house and having lots of cameras trained at them. That should help. I think that's in the Relate pamphlet of if your relationship is going through a bit of a sticky patch, the best thing is announce to the waiting press and use every photo opportunity. Apparently it's a healing process.
The papers were quite scathing about their relationship, actually. They said it was a media creation, a point they made again on pages 2, 3, 4, 7, and on the big split centrefold pullout, you know.
It's a bit of a come down these days, isn't it? Like, they're described as our most glamorous showbiz couple. And you think, well, at one time that would have been Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, who actually made films rather than went to films. Different thing, isn't it?
Elizabeth Taylor hasn't made a film for quite a while, has she? She's become a dame now, hasn't she? Widow Twanky.
As the story broke, all the newspapers were running pictures of a scantily clad figure in a flimsy outfit, barely held together with strategically placed safety pins, but we've added quite enough about Leo Blair. Clive, why might we be hearing the call at Wimbledon of smelly balls, please?
Well, it makes a change from the old new balls joke at Wimbledon. Now, this is just the sort of question that normally catches me out on my occasional visits to this program, because this can't have been all over the place, but I have heard of this. I think it's a Danish company has patented, as we say in the law courts, or patented, as you say, a smell. And they're selling smells all around the world. And their first one is the smell of newly mown grass. And for some reason, you can have your balls impregnated, which makes a first, obviously, you can have your balls impregnated with the smell of new mown grass, and because the ball is striking the ground every now and then, it smells like you're playing at Wimbledon. Nonetheless, you'll still, you know, if you're British, be eliminated in the first round, so it won't make any difference. But I think that is the story, and I'm so pleased with myself for seeing such an obscure story that nobody should really have noticed.
But it's also great legal. You should know as a lawyer. It's a great legal first, because it's the first European Union recognised trademark in a smell, because there are two smells registered in Britain as
the whiff
copyrighted.
Of beer on
and one
darts
is beer
flights.
On darts. Yes, there's some firm is selling darts which smell of beer on their flights.
Well, I think that's all right. I don't see why you can't patent smells. It's more sensible than patenting people's genes, which seems ridiculous. You know, the thing that gives you blue eyes, you can, you know, a scientist now owns you. That's madness, don't you think?
Thank you, caller.
You're all looking blank because it's not in this week's news. You've all heard about that.
Okay. Correct. 2 points. Francis, whose victory was dogged by hair-raising accusations?
Some chappy, a poodle breeder by trade, is facing, I think, a ban of 30 years if he's convicted.
Well, but that's only 6 years in human years. So.
He was accused of using performance-enhancing substances
hairspray.
On his poodle, which turned out to mean
hairspray.
Yes, exactly, that's what I mean. Which is not allowed. I mean, I had no idea that hairspray wasn't allowed in this company. Bad news for old Heseltine. He's never going to enter Crufts again.
Poodles don't need hairspray. They have that lovely, curly, sort of woolly stuff, don't they?
Well, after the hairspray.
Yeah, but I think he
you should see them in the morning.
It's all
a mess.
Terrible bedhead they get.
Oh, it's all flat and sticking up.
In fact, they did ask the poodle. They said to the poodle, you know, are you wearing hairspray? And the poodle said, yes, because I'm worth it.
If you'd done a French accent as well, that'd have been so good. It's a French poodle, cat, you know. Anyway, never mind all that. What is the name of this hairspray, and where can you get it? That's what.
Well,
I
also that.
Did you see the dog in question? It had this sort of selective alopecia, where it's sort of big woolly bits on its legs and arms, and then a big.
Well, that's what they do with poodles. It's topiary. You just sort of get the old hedge clippers out.
So what's the background? Did he win the poodle won the competition, and then somebody raised an objection and said, well, you should see him when he goes out in the rain after it's all fallen.
Prize poodle breeder Roger Bayliss has been accused of cheating by using a banned substance on his best of breed winner at a Welsh Kennel Club show. It was hairspray. The prize-winning poodle was called La Marca Le Merle Oscar Wilde, so hairspray is probably the least of its worries. So before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Linda.
Well, thanks to Robin Bank of Cheshire for this cutting from the Daily Telegraph. Woman's battle with beetle leaves husband battered. An Israeli woman's battle with a stubborn cockroach landed her husband in hospital with severe burns, a broken pelvis and broken ribs, the Jerusalem Post reported yesterday. The wife stamped on the insect, threw it in the toilet and sprayed a full can of insecticide on it when it refused to die. Her husband later threw a cigarette end into the bowl, igniting the insecticide fumes and seriously burning his sensitive parts. Then two ambulance men, shaking with laughter at the incident, dropped the stretcher down the stairs, causing the other injuries.
Clive.
I'm afraid I've got a long one, and it's from
that cameraman.
The ITC are going to be on to this programme next, I tell you.
It's from Catherine Beaton, who sent a cutting from the Herald, Glasgow. Due to the sad inevitability of men frequently dying younger than women, the female residents of a Renfrewshire nursing home are particularly keen when there's a new man who comes to stay. A fresh face has indeed arrived at the home, and one of the women is keen to find out all about him, where he's from, what he did. Eventually, the chap admits he is recently released from prison, but she does not give up, and eventually got him to admit what he was inside for. Reluctantly, he tells her, "I murdered my wife with an axe." After digesting this news, she says to him, "So, you're single then?"
John.
This is a cutting from the Journal of the Welsh Black Cattle Society, something I read every week. So thanks to FM Slater of Powys for this. There's a picture of a Welsh black cow, as it happens, and it says, "Lewis Kiriog, now the property of Mr. John Pratt, whose semen is now available and has been in great demand."
Francis.
Simon, this is from last Saturday's Times. Trainees at the Royal Navy's premier gunnery school have been ordered to shout out "bang" instead of firing live ammunition in an attempt to save the Ministry of Defence money. Gunners say that the ruling, which will save £5 million over 3 years, is turning the Navy into a laughingstock and could affect performance in action.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Francis and John with a wonderful 15, but Linda and Clive holding on to their lead, this week's winners with 16 points. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Scottish Mirror.
A national design competition challenging students to tell a lie convincingly has been thrown into chaos after a fibbing hoaxer sent a letter to all the universities and colleges taking part, telling them it had been cancelled.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Linda Smith, Francis Green, Clive Anderson and John O'Farrell. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was Lucy Armitage.